Good morning, Your Honors. Donald Cook for the plaintiff, Jerome Clemons. June 28, 2004, Sheriff's Department takes custody of Mr. Clemons. When they take custody of Mr. Clemons, they have the official documentation establishing that he's not the James Clemons.
Counsel, this is really troubling. A guy spending 3 weeks in jail when it was somebody else's name on the arrest warrant. Just wrong guy. Why didn't his lawyer mention it at the arraignment?
Well, Mr. Clemons testified he wasn't representing arraignment. Mr. Clemons testified.
Pardon?
Mr. Clemons testified he had no representation.
He did not have a lawyer at arraignment.
Correct. His testimony was, I'm taken to the courthouse. I'm in a holding cell. Sheriffs then take me from the holding cell to the county jail. I never appear before any judge. When you read the transcript of the proceeding.
It was a video arraignment?
No. It was just, there's less than 20 words spoken. The judge says, basically, Clemons' case, Mr. Montgomery, presumably a public defender assigned to the court, says, we're going to need a probation report. And the judge says.
Oh, so he did have a lawyer. He had a public defender.
I'm saying all the transcript shows.
But did he have a lawyer or not?
He says, he testified he did not. There is a public defender.
There must be a record, and the record must establish. People stand up and say, John Doe for Mr. Clemons.
The transcript in this case does not reflect that. The minute order states that Mr. Montgomery was Mr. Clemons' lawyer. The minute order also states that the defendant is present in court. That is not reflected in the reporter's transcript. And Mr. Clemons testified, I never went before any judge. I was just in the courthouse, in the holding cell, then I'm taken to county jail. So you look at a reporter's transcript.
Well, he says they didn't even take him upstairs to the court.
Correct. He never went before a judge. That's his testimony.
Well, but, I mean, all of us that have been trial judges, and you have a clerk sitting next to you, and they show an appearance for someone, and they show a lawyer,
Well, it depends if, I suppose, if you spent time in the Long Beach Superior Court, one of the busier courts, they process a lot of people. In any event.
My sense is when you're in these arraignment situations, you've got a public defender who's sitting there who does everybody, and you've got a prosecutor who's assigned to that court who does everybody.
Sure. It's a stack of files on both.
He had a lawyer, but he didn't have, it wasn't necessarily the best representation or anyone who knew him.
Right. You're correct. Stack of files at either end of the tables. Mr. Clemons.
So he had a lawyer, a public defender. You're just saying defender hadn't met with him beforehand.
What I'm saying is what Mr. Clemons testified to, and I'm acknowledging what is stated in the minute order, and I'm saying what the reporter's transcript shows. The reporter's transcript, as I say, is very brief, less than 20 words, and it's obvious that the judge thinks that the prisoner number 817 whatever is supposed to be the defendant. I mean, of course the judge is going.
How come your client didn't say anything right then?
First of all, my client says, I was never before the judge. That's his testimony. What he says is, I told the Long Beach people, the ones who arrested him, you've got the wrong guy.
Okay, so he says he's never before the judge, but then we have a minute order that says he was before the judge and that he has a lawyer. He says he never had a lawyer, and then he says he told people, and then they also say that they have a log where they report anything if anyone says that. He doesn't happen to be on the log. So you have a lot of official records that don't support your position.
Well,
but that being said, under Monell, the cases that you say that you rely on are fairly Fairley versus Lumen and Oviatt versus Pierce, right?
Two of the cases.
And
yes.
In both of those cases, the only policy they had was inaction. Here we have in the record, they do have a policy, and it shows that some over 2,000 people were processed under that. So what is the policy of inaction here? I don't see that in this case.
The policy evidence, if I can just go directly to what is the most dispositive policy evidence in this case, is the testimony of the county's designated agent, Cheryl Massey, testifying under Rule 30B-6. She looks at this file. She says, he was processed according to policy. If we had to do this again, we'd do it the exact same way. You ask Mr. Beach, and they'll tell you we'll do it the exact same way. And I mention that because all you have to do is read the official documentation that they had. You can do what Michael June, the county probation officer, did on June 12th. He got this file. He looked at it. He says, hey, he's the wrong guy. The CII numbers don't match. The birth dates are different. He's not the guy. That's all that needed to be done. You want to know why this happens? It happens because, and this is from the testimony of Captain Richard Barantes, at the time captain of Inmate Reception Center, where prisoners are processed. Now he's assistant sheriff, I think. He says, look, if an outside agency says that's the person, we're not going to dispute it.
You know, it's a terrible consequence, but I can't see the constitutional issue. I can see all kinds of state tort claims, but it looks as though the county had a policy to try to do something about these wrongful detentions. It wasn't perfect, but no policy ever is. And under Monell, what you have to prove is not that they didn't have the best possible policy. You have to prove they had a policy of committing constitutional violations, which it looks to me as though what they had was a level of perhaps sloppiness, but no policy to commit constitutional violations.
Well,
and then you've got a judge saying lock them up, which leaves everybody with no alternative but to lock them up.
I think it's probably fairly common knowledge with people within the law enforcement or the justice system is that courts and judges are not investigative agencies. They're not detectives. They rely on the police to tell them.
Yeah, but the police, I mean, what they've got is he says you've got the wrong guy, but a very high number of people arrested say you've got the wrong guy.
I'm not referring to that. What I'm referring to is that the courts rely on the police to identify the people. Bring me the right body, in other words. So what we have here is the official documentation screamed from the face of it that this was not the right person.
When was there a time when somebody had the arrest warrant in his hands naming one guy who was different height and weight and plainly not this guy, and the guy in front of them at the same time and said, this isn't the guy, but I don't care. Lock him up anyway.
June 28, 2004. And we know that from the deposition testimony of the designated agent, Sergeant Massey. That documentation was given to the Sheriff's Department when they took possession of the body.
What happened June 28th?
June 28th is when he's taken from the Long Beach Jail into the county courthouse, locked up, and put into the custody of Sheriff's Department. And then he's transported to county jail.
And who had what in his hand?
The Long Beach police gave the Sheriff's Department the documentation. That would be the warrant abstract, the identification that Long Beach had performed.
I don't know what a warrant abstract is. Did they have something showing the name and the height and weight?
I'm sorry, the warrant abstract in the record at page 210 has the name, the identifying numbers on it. They also had, and this is in the record at page 202-203, the Long Beach documentation, even though it shows L.A. County booking record, and it has the identification information as to who Mr. Jerome Clemens is. And you look at identification information on this documentation, you look at the warrant abstract, he's not the guy. This is what Michael June did on June 12th.
So the county says, so we have a policy, and it's a constitutional policy. They have this disputed warrant.
Yeah, disputed warrant verification procedure.
And what your argument is, yes, they have that policy, but they don't follow it as another policy. Well, I know that's one person, Massey, says that.
It's not just one person, Your Honor. That's the county's designated agent.
I'm trying to get at what's the disputed policy. You're not saying that the warrant verification policy that they have is unconstitutional and caused your client's injury. You're saying the informal policy that they actually follow is what caused the injury.
Correct. And that informal policy is they're not going to second-guess any outside agency's determination, no matter how plain it is, from the records they receive establishing the identity of prisoners, they're not going to second-guess it. They're going to let a court tell them that, require a court to tell them to cut the person loose.
So in this case, though, did your client ever say to the Sheriff's Department, you got the wrong person?
Yes.
Was the dispute, the warrant dispute verification policy that actually is written, was that then triggered?
No. It was go tell it to the judge, quote, unquote. That was his testimony. He also submitted the testimony of other individuals who also made the same complaint, and there's no record showing up that they ever performed this disputed warrant verification procedure. And then there was my declaration where I went through all the instances of wrong persons being released from custody per the Sheriff's Department, and there's no record of ever there being a disputed warrant verification procedure initiated with these people.
Do they have some procedure of asking the guy what his name is?
Probably as part of the booking process. And my client told him, Jerome Clemens, they just put down on their records, James Clemens, but we're booking him as Jerome Clemens because he still insists on being just Jerome Clemens. And when he tells the people at the county jail he's not the right person, he's told, go tell it to the judge. He tells Michael June he's not the right person. That's the probation officer. Michael June reads the paperwork and he says, gosh, he's not the right person. That's on June 12th. County doesn't go to the court.
How many days had he been in prison then, by then?
By that time, about 16, 17 days. My point is, when the jailer knows that, look, it's the wrong person, for whatever the reason, the court has it wrong, the jailer at least has an obligation to tell the judge, because everyone knows that the judge is relying on the police, tell the judge that this guy is not really the guy that you want to hold in custody.
Could the sheriff or sheriff's representative, how would he get to a judge? I mean, he would have to call a prosecutor or say this is the wrong person.
Sergeant Mossy, in her deposition, she says, yeah, we just contact the court and says he's the wrong person. And we cut him loose, even. I mean, she said he should have been cut loose. So it's not a problem for them to go to the judge. I mean, what's really going on here?
It's not a problem for them, but the issue is whether it's a problem, I guess, for Jerome Leslie Clemens to get to see a judge.
Correct. It is a problem. I mean, all he can do is tell the sheriff, I'm not the guy. The sheriffs won't read their paperwork, which if they do, it's obvious he's not the guy. And to think that, well, the judge has made that determination and he's the guy, well, that's nonsense. The records don't show that, and as a matter of practice, everyone knows that the courts do not do investigations. That's for the police to do. And again, I go back to Sergeant Cheryl Mousey, Rule 30b-6. She's there to testify, was the processing and booking of Mr. Clemens in accordance with county custom policy or practice? She says, yes, it was. We do the same thing again. So all this talk about the warrant verification procedure is, I would submit, respectfully, a red herring.
Counsel, we're way over time.
Understood. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Paul Beach for appellees. I'd like to respond to the first issue raised by Your Honor. Specifically, if the court, the citation to the record is page, excerpts of record, page 213, which reflects that that defendant was represented by public defender Brent Montgomery. That's on page 213. And the court's docket is at excerpts of record, page 221, which reflects that defendant is present in court and represented by defendant Montgomery, deputy public defender.
So maybe as an ineffective assistance of counsel against his defender. I mean, do we know what he said to him? I'm not the guy?
No, we don't. And that's important. What we're talking about here is specifically a Monell claim against a jailer. He was arrested by Long Beach Police Department, and he was ultimately brought to court, and the judge remanded him to the sheriff.
They settled that suit after our prior decision saying.
Yes, Your Honor. Long Beach, they settled out with Long Beach. There are no longer parties to this proceeding. The jailer
here. They didn't all have one or another kind of immunity, did they?
Long Beach?
the state claims, was there an immunity bar for all the state claims?
All the state claims were barred against the county. That was the prior Ninth Circuit opinion. With regard to Long Beach, they settled, so I assume that somebody paid some money. I'm not sure why. But in any event.
Well, they arrested the wrong guy.
Probably for arresting the wrong guy and keeping him in jail for 3 weeks.
That would be a reason, I would imagine.
I wasn't. Yeah, you're exactly right. And I know there's a lot of matters behind me. I just want to make a couple brief points specifically, which is here we're talking about a Monell claim against a jailer. Here the jailer received a person and a court order that said, hold the prisoner. And from the jailer's perspective, they don't know what goes on in court, why the judge, what arguments were made by the prosecution, what arguments were made by the defense, just that the judge, for either one of those arguments or for whatever the reason the judge believed, this person should be remanded on no bail, which is what happened. And so that's the first reason why this should be affirmed. The second reason should be, which is.
Hold on. I'm looking at 221, which you referred us to. It's kind of cryptic.
Yes, Your Honor. And
procedure is this? Is this some months before when the judge says this fellow, James Clemens, should be arrested and held without bail?
No, Your Honor. This is actually the entire document. But I'm specifically referring to the very bottom portion of page 221. It says on 6-28-04. That's the date of the hearing. After Mr. Clemens was arrested, he was brought to court. That's the court's records of those proceedings. And then on the next page over.
Hold on. Let me see how to read this. Defendant is present in court and represented by Brent Montgomery. I see.
Yes. And then in the next page, further on in that proceedings of that day's court proceedings, it says custody status remanded to custody. But the second issue, which was raised earlier in the panel, which is this is Monell.
When the guy says, I'm not James, I'm Jerome, I gather they say tell it to the judge.
Well, actually, Long Beach arrested him and booked him, and that's on page 206 of the excerpt of record. They arrested him as Jerome Clemens, a.k.a. James Clemens. That's how he was arrested by Long Beach.
I guess they could arrest me and say Andrew Kleinfeld, a.k.a. James Clemens, and I'd sit in jail for 3 weeks.
What
is the remedy?
Well, there's a couple different remedies. Number one, with regard to the arresting agency, the law is legion that you have to have sufficient cause under the Fourth Amendment to arrest the person on the warrant.
Well, they've got a different name, and they've got this really short guy, 5'5".
And those warrant cases, there can be liability under 1983 for those warrant cases. What's most important is that there's a court order telling the jailers to hold him. But if you go back to the warrant issue, here the eyes matched, the hair matched, the weight matched, the height virtually matched.
5'5" and 5'7" virtually matches?
Actually, yes, it's pretty close, Your Honor, in these kinds of proceedings. The race matched, the gender matched, the last names matched, and their first names both begin with J, and the birth dates are about a month off.
So I should hope none of my cousins do anything bad.
Unfortunately, that's the Farrelly case, actually, of the Ninth Circuit, where there was a policy of inaction, where there was held liable. And I was one of the counsel in the Farrelly matter, and the County of Los Angeles did their disputed warrant verification process and procedures in order to avoid that very situation.
Okay, so now we're down to this policy. This is what concerns me. Okay, so Farrelly says you can't have this wait and see, and the sheriff is liable because that's their policy. So the sheriff creates this new policy, the disputed warrant verification policy. But it doesn't, and they write it all up, and it sounds really good, but they don't follow it according to the testimony.
Respectfully, Your Honor,
I'm asking you, because this is the problem. I mean, the first thing you look at in Monell is you look at what is the policy at issue.
And the evidence in the record on summary judgment at excerpts of record page 152 to 154 are that there is a policy and that policy is followed. And the only evidence submitted at summary judgment in opposition to that was during the preceding 6 years, there were, in addition to Mr. Clemens, there were two other instances where the policy supposedly wasn't followed out of all the bookings and that it wasn't followed. And one of those persons actually preceded the implementation of this policy. So other than Mr. Clemens, the plaintiff on summary judgment to rebut the defendant's showing was only that there was one other person. And under the Monell law, sporadic or isolated instances.
How come I know that law? But how, why was it that when Clemens said you got the wrong person to the sheriff, that policy wasn't triggered?
Well, on summary judgment, there was a disputed evidence as to whether or not he complained at all. The defendant's evidence was that he didn't complain.
Yeah, okay, we get to the standard again, like we did in the last case. So we have to, Clemens is a non-moving party. We have to view the facts in the light most favorable to him and all reasonable inferences from that. So there's disputed evidence on whether Clemens did or did not say. I mean, I would tend to believe the person who said I was protesting my innocence.
And even if you do believe him, because this is a Monell claim, it's not material because even if you violated that person's rights, unless it's caused by a policy or practice, then it's not actionable under Monell.
How do you distinguish our holding at page 918 of Fairley v. Lumen? Just explain to me, suppose we were to write something, what would we say about page 918 of Fairley v. Lumen? It looks as though that's saying that there's a genuine issue of fact that could go to a jury and whether there's a policy or not.
In Fairley, was there a policy?
No. They didn't do anything.
I would distinguish Fairley with saying that where there was inaction and where there is, under Monell, where there is a policy and it just doesn't work all the time, then you have to look at it and see. I mean, maybe if it didn't work half the time, then maybe someone would be able to create a triable issue on saying, well, your policy doesn't work, so you have a policy of locking people up. But
in this record, the only evidence was that over the 6 years, there were, if you believed everybody, there were three instances where it didn't work. The other evidence is that it worked on all of the other occasions. So under Monell, that's insufficient.
What is the policy exactly here to catch people that were arrested on a warrant for somebody else?
If a person says, I'm not that person on the warrant, then to further investigate it and then try to remedy if that person really isn't the person, then to seek his release.
And who's under the policy? Is the policy in the record?
It's articulated at page 152 through 153, and the actual forms which are used are at pages 158 and 159. It's a long checklist that jailers would go through. But again,
and how long does it take to implement that policy to finally determine whether the person is the correct person or not?
It could vary upon the circumstances. You might have to track down information from a variety of sources. I see I'm at red, but I'll be happy to stay. But if you want to,
we'll see if my colleagues have further questions.
Yeah. On the sheets that you submitted, Mr. Clemens' name isn't on them in that dispute warrant verification policy, right?
Correct.
It's not on there. So
it's not on the log because
your point is this is our policy, we follow it. Oops, we didn't in this case.
And that even if that's true, under Monell, there's no liability.
Okay. I understand it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
I have just 30 seconds. I'll keep it in 30 seconds.
All right.
With regard to the claim that the sheriff did not know what happened inside the courtroom with the judge, the sheriff's department provides the bailiff services for all the courts in Los Angeles County. That's a matter of
the what?
The sheriff's department provides the bailiffs for all of the courts in Los Angeles County. They had bailiffs.
So they're supposed to be listening to cases. They're supposed to be looking at prisoners and making sure that no one, and making sure that no one attacks the judge and all of that. But they're supposed to be like the court reporter?
I'm just saying they have the means to have access to that information. The next point, excerpt of record, pages...
Past 30 seconds.
You asked me a question? Excerpt of record, pages 77 and 78, paragraphs 9 to 10, my declarations. I went through the records, the computer records of the county they produced. Only 5% of prisoners' complaints...
Thank you, counsel.
...are checked. Thank you.
Clemens v. City of Long Beach is submitted. We'll hear Hanchin v. Zenon Pictures.